Well, am I on the radio? I don't know. I think I'm on the radio. I think I'd like set it up wrong. So, hopefully, I'm broadcasting something. Is it playing a jingle? I can't tell. What is happening? Okay, hello, good morning. I've been sitting here nervously for about, I don't know. 15 minutes with the same cup of chamomile tea, pretending that it's going to be able to calm me down. Oh, I've just got a message from someone. That's very helpful. Thank you. Yeah, so this is We Can't Promise Anything advice with Marion and Gilly. I'm Gilly, I'm the one in brackets. Marion is the one who really knows what's going on. We are too nervous to record live, and also I am at work, so I'm having a tea break while I press go. This is episode two of a very amateur advice show, which we emphasize a lot all the time. But maybe I should say something more in case you didn't listen the last time. You still can on the Star and Shadow Radio Show reel on the internet. Marion has helped me with all of my problems since I've known her, and I think she has great advice, and we have really interesting conversations about my problems and problems of others. So I thought, why not share her out? And yeah, we talk about five problems today, but we've got much more focused, so it seems okay. Okay. Oh, and our friend Jack Burton has written some jingles for the show, but he wrote five. And so we start off by listening to that together. So I'll play that, and then I'll play the show we recorded. And if you want, you can imagine Marion and me dancing along to the jingle, which is definitely what we did. Here bloody goes. Oof. What do you think of that one then, Marion?
Well, I think I much prefer it to last week's, actually. I liked last week's, which was last week's was a little bit more even. This one had a lot more different kind of tones to it. So
I felt like I was like on a gazebo of like a beautiful bar in like Greece, watching the beach, watching the sea.
yeah, and there was lots of action going on, and it was busy, and there was lots of variety
But
and
also
things happen.
very relaxed. I think that's just because I'm so deeply sunburnt.
Well, that could have something to do.
But that
Maybe
sort
it's
of reminds
mine.
me of like being on holiday and being a bit like, I always think that like my Middle Eastern heritage is going to like protect me from getting sunburnt. And then I remember that my Middle Eastern heritage is actually like an Eastern European Jewish heritage.
Yeah, and isn't it funny how you still think the same thing and then you still learn the same way that it's not completely true?
Yeah, I
That
mean,
the protection that you think you've got, and
yeah.
you just go the same cycle again and
Well, I
again and
haven't
again.
been burnt that many times in my life, but I will learn my lesson now. You know, I can't really be an agony aunt, even if I am a very amateur agony aunt, unless I can take some advice. You know, I need to be able to learn from my mistakes, I think.
Well, absolutely. And as you know, we're all a work in progress,
Quite.
are we not?
Definitely us as amateur agony ants. So
Oh,
in case anyone didn't listen to the first episode, I'm Gilly and this is Marion.
hiya.
Marion is I like to call her the true sage of North Newcastle. She's a very wise woman. She's helped me with all of my problems. So now this is a process of sharing her out to everybody else. So we're going to talk about people's problems. People have sent in their problems via email to wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com. And we've actually had loads of problems, so we've made a selection this time. Sorry if we don't get to yours. But please do send in more problems. We're enjoying this.
Yeah. Yes, we are.
So we've had some feedback from the previous episode.
Oh, right. Good.
What have you been told?
Well, I've been told one of the things I've been told is that maybe don't ramble quite so much, be a little bit more focused.
Which
I thought was quite good feedback, because last time was our first attempt and we were unscripted, unedited, and
I can't be bothered with editing.
Oh no, well, you know, no, we're not going to do that. But I think last time I was really nervous, so I hope I can be a little bit more focused this
time. Have you had a whiskey, Marion?
No, I've got a strong builder's brew on the go.
Well, if that's not going to knock your nerves off, then I don't know what is.
Well, here's hoping, dear.
My dad said that that we're very good, but we need to stop saying we're amateur. And I tried to explain that amateur is not for me about being bad. Amateur is about doing it for the love of it.
Absolutely, I agree. I think we're not putting ourselves out there as experts. We're amateurs, and I think that's something to celebrate.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to engage with all other amateurs out there, who can then send us feedback with their opinions. So it's a very inclusive exercise. This.
Yes. So we did get some advice. Like, we've got some feedback in the form of advice for a previous problem. So last time, one of the problems was about not being able to sort of steel yourself and get on with the life admin that you know you need to do. And one of the bits of advice we've got from the listenership, the Star and Shadow Radio listenership, is this person's advice is that they look for ways to make the process a bit more enjoyable, like embellishing the space dedicated to those tasks, depending on their taste, maybe organizing with color-coordinated binders and symbolic book stops. Or if they're a computer dork, to make a big folder on their desktop which stands out on the desktop background. Or if they're a messier person, to put it all in a basket and hang it from the ceiling with a nice stone or some flowers hanging over it. The person who wrote in said, I personally feel paperwork and admin is a massive betrayal of my nature as a human animal, hence it being so painful to do. So my advice is to look for ways to make it a bit more pleasing to one's personal nature. It's nice, isn't it?
You know, isn't that fantastic advice?
Yeah.
And I think I've taken a little bit of that on board myself this week. And certainly I've got a lovely little corner of the garden now where I can sit and quite happily do a few little bits of admin.
Oh,
you know,
great. I do think that having a tidier space really helps me. I can't stand it when there's mess.
Yeah. I also find it quite comfort that other people experience the same difficulties at addressing what needs to be done sometimes as me. So it's quite comfort knowing that I'm not alone, and I'm not a lonely failure. There's other failures out there too.
Yes, I'm definitely putting off some more admin, but you know,
yeah,
ever so busy.
Yeah,
whatever I want to be busy with. So we did get another bit of we did get another response. So this was the question about, you know, we had that question about someone's parents send them things that are very politically different to what they want.
Yeah.
And they were finding it really difficult to sort of communicate that. And the parents just kept sending sort of right-wing stuff that they didn't want to get. I think that's what how they described it. Can correct us. So it was actually their friend who wrote in, and we got a really great response. So it says, my friend and I listened very attentively to your show using the listen again function on the Mixlr website. It's a very good thing to know about.
Yes, it is.
So firstly, thanks so much. It was really wonderful to hear two people giving such a lot of time to problems. There was a lot of empathy and insight in equal measure. Oh, thanks very much.
Mm.
So on to my friend's problem. We discussed your thoughts and think you are quite right to see this behaviour as actually a desire to connect, even though it was hard to see it as such. We were excited by the idea of not only ignoring the emails, but actually deleting them. That, we agreed, felt like a very liberating way to manage the situation. The concept of re-education was slightly confusing, only because it sounds like something conscious, but when you talked about the Pavlov style, then we agreed that it sounded more like training a response subconsciously through repeated behavior rather than lecturing. They said if they checked in about where in their body the feeling rose when triggered, it was in the temples, forehead, throat, and solar plexus. And recognizing it and letting that pass felt like a big relief, and they could imagine retaining a bit of self-balance instead of bursting a blood vessel. My friend looked visibly relieved after listening. Thanks so much. I hope others feel as listened to and heard as my friend here.
What lovely feedback. And actually, I was very hopeful about that relationship with the parents. Mm. I thought there was a lot of redeemable features to it, and it was more a tweaking process rather than a revisiting it, but I think that's what the feedback says anyway.
The thing about the education is, you know, it sounds like, from what I remember, what I read is that you're not going to be able to lecture your parents. I mean,
no,
when I try and lecture my dad, it always goes down very badly.
And I think it was me who said re-educate, and I didn't mean it in a lecturing way. So that's a little lesson of how what you say can be interpreted in different ways, that what you say isn't necessarily what you're feeling. What I meant was you can retrain your thought processes. You can retrain habits. Yeah.
Very good. So we've got a similar...
I was absolutely hopeful. Yes, we do. And so, spookily, this time we've got another problem, which is actually not dissimilar, but we might say different things. Anyway, shall I read the problem?
Go on, then.
Hi, my sister from Australia phones me twice a week. She is a me person, never listens to anything I say. I can't help her with her petty problems. One minute it's, oh, I'm so happy. Next it's, oh, I'm so lonely, nobody loves me. Help.
And then they say, good luck with that one.
They do say good luck with that one. And it's actually, that's what I feel like saying to the person who's asked the question. Good luck with that one. Because although it's about another family relationship, it's also a little bit, I don't think it's, well, I think it's as it is rather than hope for change, too much change. Right? Do you think?
I agree. You know? I don't think, I mean, I think, well, in some ways it's similar in that, like, you can respond in such a way as to ground yourself really in the context of your own capacities.
And you can't choose, you know, your family or your family, you don't choose them, you just have them. And it's, I think, wherever possible, you want to maintain a relationship with members of your family, because it's kind of part of who you are and where you've come from and everything. So sometimes it would be more painful to cut ties.
And it doesn't sound like it's to that stage. They're not like falling out.
No, I think it's just, you know, maybe she's a me person, and that's just who she is and can't be changed because that's who she is. I have to say, Gilly, there's a lot of me people around sometimes, you know.
I wonder whether it's about saying, if she rings up and just saying, oh, hiya, lovely to hear from you. I've got half an hour.
Well, absolutely. So I was thinking, first of all, why don't you be really grateful that she doesn't live around the corner, two calls a week, you know, it's not too much to ask. But maybe we could suggest some strategies for not getting too frustrated when she's on the call, when she's calling, like, you know, put her on loudspeaker and use your time constructively when she's right. So do something that's useful for you, and just practice making nice noises, you know, encouraging noises of, you know, really, or how interesting. So that she feels she's got your attention up to a point, because she doesn't want your complete attention. She just wants to talk about her, right?
That's so funny, Marion. I think that might be more towards the end of, like, hi, sister, like, I love you. I'm so sorry to hear that you're having a difficult time. But you've not asked any questions about me. Can I talk to you about something that I've got going on?
I think that's a good idea. But sometimes people are like that. I just say, oh, well, how's things with you? And then carry on talking about themselves. I would be prepared to not necessarily change the dynamics of the conversation immediately. I think it's fine to chuck that in from time to time, but I think I would do it without any expectations at all.
I also wonder whether, well, first of all, you don't always have to answer the phone. Like, you don't,
correct.
None of us always have to answer the phone. We don't always have to make ourselves available. And I'm assuming the sister is calling via WhatsApp or something else. So you'll see who's calling, you just not take the call. I mean, it's totally fine to do that. I'm often, you know, occupied with something when someone calls, and I'll call them back or not if it doesn't seem like something that I want to do.
Do you think, really, that sometimes we'll forget that we've got choices? So sometimes you do things like automatically answer the phone just because it's what you automatically do, and you don't have to do that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I've watched people get in a real flap trying to answer the phone, and it's like, you just pause, wait, breathe. Maybe you don't need to be having that conversation now. And eventually, a bit like last week's caller, you might be able to train her out of a two-weekly call if that's not what you want. She might start to see that the right rhythm is once a week or once every other week or something, if that's what's right for you. But I also think, like, be generous. Maybe she's not got the pals that you have, the people to turn to. And maybe that's part of the conversation to say, have you spoken to whoever about this who's a bit more local?
Yeah. Yes. I think that's a very good idea.
Spread the load.
Be a bit, try and divert it a little bit. But if you can't, have a strategy for not getting too frustrated, and then if it goes on too long, have a way of terminating the call. Go and ring your own doorbell and say, I'm sorry, I've got to go, the posties at the front door, whatever.
I mean, Marion, I think you're a bit better at sort of like doing the polite lying thing, whereas I'm not very good at that. I normally end up just going, oh, I'm desperate for a wee, I've got to go. Which is more often than not true.
Sometimes you've just got to do what you've got to do, because it's better to bring it to an end than to let it carry on. So if you can bring it to an end in a good way and not in a rude way, that's a good thing. Whatever way works for you.
Well, I think that's a good conclusion to that problem for now.
You know,
I'm interested to hear what the problem haver says in response, if they're listening. Shall we move on to
the next thing? Yes, me too. I would like to get a bit of feedback on that. Yes, please.
Shall I read this one out then?
Oh, right. The next. Yes, please. This one is quite a long one, I think.
Yes. So this one has come from our fellow Star and Shadow radio broadcaster, Dr. Harriet Lewis. I like to add the doctor. I mean, she is a doctor, but not a medical doctor. But I like to use the title. Anyway.
Yes, it's quite, I acknowledge it, yes, and respect it, indeed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Harriet says, I have a problem that's a little bit dry and boring, but I don't think it's dry and boring at all. So,
what
she says is, so Harriet has this radio show called Read Me the Riot Act, which is on at 8 a.m. every weekday morning for an hour. And in that radio show, she reads out actual laws. Right, so she reads out legislation, she reads out acts, and they're often things pertinent to what's happening in our environment. So she's been reading legislation around employment recently, really interesting.
Right.
And I one of the shows she talked about how important it is to sort of ventriloquize this language so that we can use it for what we need to use it. And I've thought about that a lot. She's also got a lovely voice and she plays like really fun music at the end. So what Harriet says is, I want to know whether you think I should read the leaked Labour document on the radio show. So the doc looks at apparent factional problems and obstacles within the Labour Party that might have led to Labour not doing as well as they might have in the 2017 election. So not the general election just gone, but the one before that, when Theresa May got in, but she lost some of her majority. So, but Harriet says also potentially beyond. So here are the issues. Is it kind of blur to read something so oriented to party politics when people are eating their breakfast? It's long, so it'll take at least 2 weeks to read. Will it violate some kind of star and shadow neutrality? Will it get star and shadow in trouble? Maybe Labour might have gagged someone from promoting or reading it, but maybe that's not possible really. Her feelings are, you don't have to listen and spoil your breakfast. Oh, well, it's long, but we've got time at the moment. In some ways, who cares about neutrality? And she's going to check out the legals. So what do you think?
I think checking out the legals is a really good idea. And as long as it's legally okay, I would say absolutely go for it. I think it's a great idea to do.
I agree. I wonder if someone could, if any lawyers are listening. I know my friend Dan, who is an ex-lawyer, he listened last time. Maybe he's listening. Maybe he could let us know what he thinks about the legals of it. I think you should totally do it, Haz.
I think you should totally do it. I think it's really interesting. I think Labour are due... It is political, but also it's not political. It's newsworthy. It's a report that's written. I think Labour are due to make some sort of announcement about this report in July. And I think it would be, for me, really useful to kind of have an idea of a little bit more in detail what the content of it is. So that when Labour start to talk about it, I'd have a bit more background.
And I do think there's something really palatable about listening to these things rather than reading them always. Like sometimes I feel a bit daunted by reading things that maybe I'm going to find difficult. But like listening to someone with a lovely voice.
Totally daunted, Gilly. I wouldn't read it. I know I can be that honest about me that I definitely wouldn't read it. But I love listening to people talking. I think it would be a fantastic alternative to the Today programme on Radio 4. And I don't think it would put anybody off their breakfast. I think it would be a very, very interesting diversion and something to listen to. And then listen to another interpretation of it in July when the report is formally published and commented on.
I do also, there's something really interesting about like how personal something becomes when it's in a voice, you know, when it's in an actual voice rather than something written down in black and white. There's something humanizing about it. And I guess I think, like, I am a member of the Labour Party, a slightly sort of weirdly reluctant member of the Labour Party, with a lot of questions. And I'd be really keen to hear this read out. I would listen. I mean, I like listening to the show anyway. I really recommend it. It's wonderful. And I can totally imagine listening to that while I, you know, do me toast.
But do you not think, regardless of what your political leanings are, it's interesting to know about all parties, what they publish, what the report, what they do. And this is only just one aspect, you know. A healthy democracy is one where you have of lots of parties, and the more information you know about them, the more informed your decisions can be, and you can make decisions for the right, not the wrong ones. I think it's a fantastic idea, so I would say absolutely.
Yeah, strong support from We Can't Promise You Anything.
Yeah. But it would be lovely to hear what anybody else thinks as well.
That's true. So people, if you want, you can send, people can send in problems to wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com. You can send in your own advice and you can send feedback on the show and what we say in it.
Absolutely. And if you don't agree with it, with what we say, that's fantastic too. It's everybody's welcome.
Yeah, and you can get yourself your own radio show.
Yeah.
So there. Do your own. Hey, the next problem we've got also has a sort of political bent. Shall I read it out?
Right, go on then.
Okay.
Yes, please.
So the Freelance Foundation, this comes from the wonderful Rosalie Schweiker. Everyone should know about Rosalie Schweiker. They're an artist. I have a print of theirs, a t-shirt of theirs, a book of theirs. I'm a big fan. So Rosalie says, the Freelance Foundation is supporting a lot of the artist emergency funds. So for those who don't know, artists are often self-employed, and under the conditions we're in now, where all the arts organisations where we might do our work or be paid by, they're also under massive financial strain. So lots of work has been cancelled. And it's a very difficult moment for freelance artists right now. So yeah, there are these artist emergency funds coming from different places, sometimes for specific groups. So this foundation, the Freelance Foundation, is a foundation set up by Elizabeth Murdoch of the Murdoch family. So, you know, the Murdoch family owns a lot of the right-wing media all around the world. Yeah.
Including
things like Fox in the US, which is responsible for a lot of like really, really racist, homophobic, sexist, anything else bad, just bad news. So Rosalie says, is it okay to take the money from this foundation because we need it, or is this the wrong kind of charity? Why does Elizabeth Murdoch want to support the arts when her family has been ruining our society for decades? Is there no other money available? I'm not sure what to do. I might just apply and take the money if I get it, but am I just kidding myself by thinking I can do something good with bad money?
Wow. Well then. So my answer is take the money. Right.
Why?
Because I think if you start to look at the ethics of most philanthropic offers or support from big commercial organizations, capitalist organizations, whatever, you might be unhappy with lots of the ethics of lots of them. And it's maybe it's not so much about what they do, maybe it's more about what you do, and to have an opportunity to do something good is to do something creative is a good thing. But I would take the money, but I think there's a complete open debate of the moral, there's a moral issue about doing that. But do you want to deny the world of something good because of the origin of it, because you want to do some sort of moral check on where the money comes from? Because if you live your life like that, you might find that every moral check you do on everything actually leaves most sources of funding wanting in some ways, in some way or another.
Well, I agree.
Maybe if you want to...
Ooh.
All I was going to say is, if you want to change the world, maybe politics is, active politics is a route to go down rather than... I'm not trivializing the moral issues of it, Gilly, at all.
Well, I guess I think that, like, you know, Rosalie is very, knowing her work, she's very politically active in lots of different ways. And I guess I think, like, there's this idea that, you know, money from the state is more neutral, but it's not, you know. The state also promotes particular sort of ideological frameworks or expressions of culture in certain ways at different times in history. So I also agree that, like, you must take the money, but also because, you know, we don't have proper mechanisms for wealth redistribution in this country. And there is a sort of moral washing of the money and sort of saying, oh, well, it's fine that the Murdochs do these. I think we can trivialize the Murdochs kind of activity. Well, they're just a media company, but actually they directly cause deaths, you know, getting into sort of a bit of hot water here, but I think they directly cause a lot of suffering by promoting, for instance, political parties that do a lot of damage to people. So I definitely like feel the conflict, but I do also think that until we have proper mechanisms by which those who hoard the wealth at the expense of others, it's actually the wealth of other people that they hoard because of the structures we're in. I think take all the money we can off the rich people.
I think you have to be clear in your head that you're not condoning the actions of that company, right? You're not, by accepting the money, you're not validating them. And they're doing this philanthropic thing for their own reasons, whatever that reason is. And the reason might be simply a tax break and good publicity.
Yeah, I mean, it might be possible that, you know, normally when you get a grant from a grant given organization, you have to like put it on any publicity material or whatever, which is a bit tricky, isn't it?
Yeah,
but maybe not.
I do think it's a dilemma, right? And I do see a moral issue, I also think that the sources of lots of finance and charities, the deeper you dig, the more uncomfortable you might become. And it's, you know, if you can do something good with it and creative, why not do it?
Yeah. Great. Right. We're very agreed.
I know.
Well, I think the next problem, we're not going to agree as clearly.
Oh, so, do you think?
Let's see. Do you want to move on to it?
Yes, I think we will, Gilly. Right, I'll read it. Dear Marion and Gilly, I'm very broody and would love to have a baby soon. The problem is that it never seems to be a good time. As a freelance artist, and financial stability hasn't always been on the top of my agenda or even possible. The housing stability is there now. I'm working on the financial side. But now with the uncertainty of COVID-19, I wonder if this is another bad time to take on the responsibility of parenthood. Another aspect is that my partner is a recovering alcoholic. He's following a program and doing well, but feels that we should wait to have kids until he's more stable in his recovery. This makes sense, but it's hard to keep waiting for the right time. What if it never comes? And in the meantime, what do I do with these broody feelings?
Well, maybe before we begin, I'll just say that I know that this person is a female gendered person. So we can use she, but we won't use the name.
Right, okay. Right, good. That's good, because it makes it a bit better, yeah. Right, so there's quite a few questions in this one, right? So, shall we start?
Off you go.
Shall we start with the uncertainty of COVID-19, I wonder if this is a bad time to take on the responsibility of parenthood. I don't think a coronavirus should be an obstacle to having babies, really. I think life goes on, right? However, I think there's other things that I would say maybe not right. Now might not be the perfect time for this person to have a baby, because first of all, their partner is in recovery and says they're not, they don't feel like they're quite ready to have a baby right now, and they would like to wait. So there's one answer, not from us, right?
Yeah.
But I think you have to listen to that and maybe be patient for a little while longer. And another thing is, it's hard to wait for the right time. Yes, it is. What if it never comes? And in the meantime, what do I do with these broody feelings? Well, I think these broody feelings, first of all, you have to say they're just like a chemical reaction in my brain. So I'm not going to be driven by a chemical reaction, right? I'm going to exert a bit of self-control. And what can I do with them? Well, you can actually put your time to good use and maybe learn a little bit more about dependencies. And if your partner is in a program, learn a little bit more about a program. Possibly they're in a 12-step program, and it would be, there's 12-step programs for also friends and family, families of people whose lives have been affected by alcohol. And I'm thinking of Al-Anon in particular, and maybe she would like to look at Al-Anon's website. I don't think any meetings are taking place at the minute, but becoming informed and knowledge and get knowledge about something will help her give a balance to making a decision rather than to become obsessed with the need to have a baby.
Right? So when you say 12 step, you mean, I've had my own experiences with 12 step programs, 12 step fellowships one way. And so 12 step program is a program of actions developed first by Alcoholics Anonymous in the 1930s in the US. And from that, similar programs have been developed on the basis of the same steps, the same different things that you do at each step, including like Gamblers Anonymous, Overeaters Anonymous, Codependents Anonymous, Debtors Anonymous, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, many, many, many fellowships, Under Earners Anonymous, there's loads of them, and they really, really help lots and lots and lots of people. In my experience, it's not for everyone and not for everyone in the same way, but it is miraculous, really, what these things can do.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're right, Gilly. It was the 12-step program was set up by two guys who were recovering alcoholics. And then their wives, their husbands were in recovery and their wives didn't know what to do. So they set up Al-Anon for friends and families. And the whole thing just grew from that. And but I think to learn about yourself and your own, I think it's more a structure to explore who you are and how you behave and how you are to yourself and to get to know yourself. It's a little bit of a little journey of self-discovery, really.
I've found doing the 12 steps, which I have done more than once, I found them really, really beneficial. I mean, now I guess I think, you know, so Russell Brand is you know, famously a 12-step practitioner, and he's written a book that sort of encourages anyone to sort of take the 12 steps. And lots of people in the 12-step universe have different opinions about Russell Brand. I think it's actually quite helpful because I do think the activities of a 12-step program are just things that are good to do. You know, they're just, you become aware of what's happening in your life. You consider your relationship to other things. You get to think about how your conduct might not be benefiting you and the others around you. You get to sort of sort yourself out in lots of ways. And I guess I kind of think if that is the work that this person's partner is doing, then it can only benefit the relationship and the potential future family for the person who's written in to also do that work. It's so
yes. Useful. And what a wonderful thing that our partner is in recovery.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. Amazing.
It's a fantastic thing. And if the partner is saying, I feel it's a bit early in my recovery, I really think you have to listen to that.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like a very, very important. I think a 12-step program offers everyone who's in any fellowship a bridge to normal, balanced living, whatever that is for you. It's different. It's different for everyone. But I think it's a bridge to anyone building a happy, balanced life, you know?
So I also think I think we have to take seriously the fact that the partner has said, I'm a bit too soon in my recovery for this. And I think that has to be taken with the gravest possible seriousness. Because,
absolutely.
You know, because alcoholism is a terrible, terrible disease. Terrible disease.
Correct.
And without recovery, there is no family. Your family life will not correct. Be worth living. So if anything is going to destabilize that recovery, there is no point. There's no point. You know, it's just going to be a horror show. From my experience around 12-step people, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. But I think I slightly disagree with you on the broodiness. I think it's much harder than you might say just to override those desires.
Gilly, I really don't mean it in a trivial way. I do think it's like a physiological thing. It's what your body's built for. Not all women get those terrible broody feelings, but lots and lots do. And it's very easy to be consumed by them. I don't know. There's other things to think about. I don't know how old this girl is. You know, if she's in her 20s, well, she might have lots of childbearing years ahead of her. You know, if she's in her 40s, it's like the pressure's a little bit increased.
Yeah.
You know? If she's in her 50s, she can always go to a clinic in Russia eventually. You know what I mean. It's like there's other factors. Age is a factor.
But I do think on that thing of like, oh, is it the right time? Will it ever be the right time? I don't have children, and I've probably only four times in my life ever had that thing of like, oh, it might be nice to have a baby, and then it goes away quite quickly, for which I'm quite grateful, really. but I do also think that when I look around at my friends, lots of whom have kids, very few of them were like, right, now is the time to have kids. Everything is set up perfectly. It's just like they get pregnant. Maybe they wanted to, maybe they weren't quite sure. Maybe they didn't want to. And somehow things just organize themselves, you know?
I think that's just life. And I think that happens to most people, that you just roll with what life chucks at you, really. You know, there's never a perfect time for anything.
I wish this person very, very, very well. I'd be interested to hear what they think of our advice. So do email back again on wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com if you've got anything to add, we can come back to it.
Yeah, I can just add at the end that I come from a family, all of us have been older mothers. So all of us, I come from a really big family, and lots of my family have had their children in their 30s or late 30s. And, you know, there's never a right time. Sometimes they, would it have been better to have had them when we're younger? Is it better when you're older? It's, some things are better, some things are worse. It's like it just is. So. You know, it's about being accepting of your circumstances, really, I think. And maybe you'd like a 12-step program would help you to be more accepting of just life as it is.
I wonder if we've left any ambivalence around whether or not we think 12-step programs are a good idea.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge supporter of 12-step programs.
Me too. Right?
But if anybody's got any other ideas that they'd like to chuck in the pot, that would be fantastic.
It is also possible that this person isn't in a 12-step program, they're using another program of recovery, of which...
I know, and it's... Okay.
Okay, I think we'll move on to the last question for a bit of lightness.
Yes, I think so. Okay.
So this problem comes from my dear, 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 dear friend, Sarah Lindstrom. in Sweden. And she's on about gardening. She says her new crush during the current situation is growing plants, vegetables and stuff from seeds, including tomatoes. And she sent us a photo, which obviously we can't share because this is a radio, of the leaves of the plant. And they seem to have become discoloured, sort of they've lost a bit of their green, they've gone all speckly. She wants to know what did she do wrong? She's definitely watered them enough. And then she says, is it true that your plants mirror your own health? If so, what are the tomato plants trying to tell me and what's the cure? I really feel like this has given my gardening confidence a real turn. Oh, Sarah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, again, we've got kind of three questions here, haven't we, Giddy? It's, so the first one is, what did I do wrong? They have enough water. I think she probably didn't neglect them enough, right?
That is your gardening methodology.
It is. That's my mantra on lots of fronts. Neglect, it's a very undervalued and underestimated quality, right? You neglect your plants and then they show you what they're made of. They'll either just give up the ghost or they'll really thrive.
Yeah, sorry, you must have been poking at them and stroking them too much.
Yeah, maybe she's been giving them too much love.
Too much love, that's it.
Let them stand on their own, in their own plant pot and, you know, pull themselves together.
Yeah, I also think, this is the first year that I've really grown loads of veg and I'm really enjoying it. But I guess the only reason I'm really able to do it is because I've got over the idea of it being perfect. Like these plants have whole lives that are nothing to do with me. Like I can give them a certain sort of set of conditions that I think are probably optimal within the conditions I have available to me. And even if I don't give them optimal conditions, they might thrive. And even if I give them perfect conditions, some of them just haven't worked. So I just kind of think like, these guys have their own lives. I just have to do my best. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work this year. And next year I'll try again.
Yeah. Yeah. I too have done the same. I've like researched, put the right soil mix together, planted things, nurtured them, and they've been awful. And then I've just chucked stuff in the garden and it's been absolutely amazing. So, you know, just...
Yeah, sorry, can't help you with that. And what about the question of whether the plants mirror your own health? And what is the tomato plant trying to tell, Sarah?
Well, you see, if that principle was true, all my plants in the garden are amazing, so my health would be perfect. I would love to be as amazing as my plants. Maybe the reverse is true.
Oh, maybe that's true. Or maybe it's got nothing to do whatsoever, Sarah. I'm very sorry to disappoint that we can't.
Yeah.
But maybe this is maybe something that someone else might want to write in about and talk about, like the relationship between plants and health.
You mean somebody who knows more about plants than
certainly
than me? I don't think I'm really a gardener, you know.
No, me neither. Although I did eat my own lettuce out of my own garden today, which was very, very exciting.
And also very, very impressive.
I feel absolutely thrilled. All because of my friend Carol who helped me. Led me all the way through. Hey, but Sarah did have one more question, which is, what should she make for a dinner? So what can Sarah make for a dinner?
Well, obviously she's not having tomatoes because her tomato plants are rubbish.
Quite.
Right. So, I'm going to tell her what I'm doing. Someone bought me for Christmas one of those Ancestry DNA kits, you know, where it tells you where your heritage comes from. And mine came back with, I was 100% Southern Irish, which was just like a one-line thing. It was all a bit disappointing, really. So I'm trying to create a cultural relationship with potatoes. So maybe you should go down a cultural route. A route and connect with your roots at the same time. You know?
I'm afraid we're going to end up saying something very, very stereotypical about Swedish people, aren't we? Sorry, Swedish.
What's culturally Swedish to eat?
I mean, they eat a lot of salmon.
Herring.
Yeah, they eat a lot of fish. I guess sandwiches, they like a sandwich. an open sandwich. I always think about that in Sweden. They always have open sandwiches. Scandinavia. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to have for my tea. But I did have an amazing lunch. I'd baked some burger buns. So in one of those I had a portobello mushroom, bit of sweet potato, bit of pepper, my homemade pickled wild garlic buds, because I copied off the cutout on Instagram. A great local calf. Calf undermines it a bit. A couple of pieces of my own lettuce. So I feel like that was a sort of prime lockdown sandwich in a way, where I've had time to do all that stuff.
Did you mention your homemade sourdough bread?
Homemade sourdough burger bun, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now, if there's not inspiration in that fabulous list for anybody to put supper together, I don't know what is.
Well, Sarah, I hope you're satisfied. I hope everyone else is satisfied, yes, because we've come to the end of the show. We've been having problems this week. I feel like we've been talking for an eternity.
Me too.
But I'm really happy that we had all these problems. I've really enjoyed the discussion. Please do send us more problems.
Yeah, or give us feedback. Yeah. What's our email address again, Gilly?
You're going to ask that every week at the end, aren't you?
I'll give the wrong combination of words. I know I will.
It's wecan'tpromiseanything@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Right, Marianne?
Me too. Well, bye then.
Bye. So that's the end. That's what we recorded. I realised a few things as I was sort of half listening. Firstly, that there was a delay on the call, so we kept cutting each other off. So sorry about that. That's just the nature of the moment. Record it on the internet. Another thing is that you keep on hearing these like farty sounds, but it's because I sit on a Pilates ball. Oh, and it's the Pilates ball that's making the sounds, not me. Because otherwise I get bad back from sitting down so much at the moment. And also, I had to cut Marianne off at the end because when you say bye to Marianne on a phone call, she says bye maybe 40 times. So I had to just, you know, I had to press stop at some point. I hope you enjoyed that. I'm finding it excruciating. But I will carry on regardless. Let's listen to the jingle again before I stop messing about with this thing. Yeah, let's do it.